Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio on the Blog Talk Network. I really do appreciate you joining us. Remember, Trisha's True Crime Radio, great taste, less filling, and always springtime fresh. It is going to be a very interesting night tonight, to say the least. But first, we have some sad news, not unexpected at all. And finally, maybe we can get forward and moving forward with this case. Haley Dunn's remains have been found. Everyone is being very quiet about the case so far. Let's hope that justice is served for poor Haley very, very soon. She's waited long enough. You can go to websleuth.com/forums and scroll down to the Haley Dunn forum. We have a very lively discussion going on there. Billy Dunn has been on the show before. I'm trying to get her to come on again. Maybe you might even have a special show next week with Billy, but we'll have to wait and see. And when you get a chance, be sure and go to motherjones.com and check out a great article about the sleuths at Web Sleuth, including Rain 1212 and Nemo's mom. Now, one day I'm going to get someone in the media to do a big piece about the moderators at Web Sleuth and how much they put into the forum. They are the quiet heroes of websleuth.com, believe me. And speaking of websleuth.com, Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by Web Sleuth Unclaimed Forum. Take a look at Web Sleuth Unclaimed Forum. You can jump right in and help people become reunited with their lost loved ones. It's very emotional. Many times it's very sad, but it's a much-needed forum. That's Web Sleuth Unclaimed Forum. Go to www.websleuth.com/forums and scroll down to our missing section. Tonight, we have a plethora of wonderful women who will fill us in on the latest in the Jodi Arias trial. HLN's Beth Karras, Katie Wick from the Dr. Drew Show, and victims advocate and friend of Travis Alexander's family, Katie Cool Lady. And in a few moments, Rain 1212 will update us on a case in California. But first, next week on Trisha's True Crime Radio, we will have Chris Hughes on the show. Chris is one of Travis Alexander's best friends. And I was talking to him a little earlier today, and I asked Chris if there was anything he didn't want to talk about, did not want to talk about next week. As those words were coming out of my mouth, hanging over my head like a balloon, I thought to myself, what haven't we talked about concerning Travis Alexander? There's nothing left. And the way Travis's family and friends have handled themselves is nothing short of miraculous. I say that because I don't know how they could sit there in the court day after day and not get up and just scream at the top of their lungs. How they cannot do that is beyond me. The people who Travis really loved are doing him proud, and they will continue to do so. One more quick update about a case and then on to the show. Dylan Redwine, another very sad case. Dylan went missing from his father's house in Colorado around Thanksgiving 2012. 13 years old, just vanished. Dylan's parents are divorced, and they appeared on the Dr. Phil show. Dylan's dad did not come off looking too good on that show. Also, he hasn't come across looking good anywhere, actually, and unfortunately, that behavior continues. I texted with Michael Redwine and asked him to be a guest on my show. Part of his reply said, this is only part of it, "My only concern is finding my son. It's clear that not everyone shares that desire." Then he went on to make an accusation against someone that is unfounded so far, and I'm not going to repeat it. I often wonder, since that text, if that's why he texted back in hopes that I would repeat it, but I will not. It doesn't have anything to do with Dylan actually missing. It doesn't have to do with the case. It has to do with something else. And it has to do with this person's sincerity in looking for Dylan. I thought it was really tacky. At the end of the text, Michael Redwine said, "As far as an interview, I respectfully decline until we know where our precious boy is." I meant to say, let's see, I think I got the name wrong here. Let's see, someone is correcting me. Mark Redwine. My apologies, Mark Redwine. I said Michael. I don't know what I had Michael on the mind. Anyway, I texted him back. And I asked him, I said, even if he didn't want to come on the show, could he at least tell me what effort he is putting in toward finding Dylan so I could tell all of you? Never said a word, never wrote back, not a peep. Now, Elaine Redwine has proven that she will do whatever she can to find Dylan. I don't know why Mark Redwine won't tell us anything. Mark Redwine, is his behavior, if you compare it to Travis's family and friends, you can see why his behavior seems so strange. Because you do what you have to do for someone you love. Let's go for another quick update to Rain112. Rain, I'm going to ask you to update us. There was a 9-year-old girl who was found stabbed to death in her bed in Northern California. The hunt is on for her killer. Law enforcement in the town of Valley Springs are warning residents that the man they're searching for is considered dangerous and armed, and they need to keep their doors locked. Local TV station KCRA says the victim's 12-year-old brother encountered the intruder in his home at around noon Saturday, and they saw the man run away. Now, Rain, you have been monitoring the scanner forum at Web Sleuths. Are there any updates about this case?
The only updates that are really going on is all the residents in the area are being very vigilant. They are calling in suspicious suspects. Scanner threat has been kind of quiet. They're letting out a little bit of information as far as areas that they're checking, homes, sheds, things like that. Also, during the day when during the scanner threat, the parents showed up. They were taken to command post. Of course, we do not know what that was discussed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still pretty quiet right now. They have been doing door-to-door searching and not getting a whole lot. I'm beginning to think that they're on a quiet channel and we're just getting bits and pieces at this time.
And that's okay. We certainly don't want to do anything to hinder the investigation. Are there any questions out there about the truth of this story? I find it to be very believable. But, of course, anywhere you go on the net, there are people saying, oh, you know, blah, 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 something else happened. So far, there's nothing to indicate it isn't exactly what the police are telling us, correct?
Correct. A neighbor reported seeing a strange man running from the house.
Okay.
Apparently, the 12-year-old was in the house. I would imagine he was hidden, called his parents, and called 911.
Okay.
So they do have a description of a gentleman, white, Hispanic, long gray hair, blue jeans, black shirt.
Well, that only applies to about 12 million guys. So hopefully, for the sake of everybody in that community, they capture this beast. And let's keep our thoughts and prayers for the family and friends of this poor little girl. Thank you, Rain. Thank you so much for updating us. It's time now to get to our show. We have Beth Karras, Katie Wick from the Dr. Drew Show, Katie Cool Lady. We'll be going to Katie Wick and Katie Cool Lady in just a bit. But right now, let's go to Beth Karras. Beth, thank you, and I appreciate you coming on the show. I know you're really busy, so thank you for taking time out.
My pleasure. At the moment, I'm working on a big memo for HLN and CNN on all of the elements of the crime and the lesser of premeditated murder and felony murder, because there's an alternative theory charge, as well as the lesser included charges that are expected to go to the jury, second-degree murder and manslaughter.
So basically the jury in the Jodi Arias trial can decide this level of the crime. They can't just pick a crime and pull it out. They have to be given the crime to choose from, right? They
correct.
Have to have the option.
That's correct.
And
they
so
have to go in order. They should, because it's just the one count, right? So they start with first-degree murder, and if they never get beyond it, they find her guilty, that's it. There's a verdict. But if they say, well, we really don't know, maybe it's second-degree murder, the only difference between the two is premeditation. Second-degree murder is an intentional killing. And, you know, some people might feel, well, it really wasn't premeditated. Some people may feel it was a manslaughter, by the way, which is the heat of passion, sudden quarrel or heat of passion. A lot of people think that something happened, that he provoked her. That's the language of manslaughter. But they should go in order, first degree, then down to second degree, and then down to manslaughter. Now, the judge hasn't determined exactly, she hasn't said, rather, exactly what's going to the jury. This is based on my experience and sort of just knowledge and submissions by the defense. I believe it's going to be at least second degree murder, but the defense last week asked for manslaughter, and I suspect the judge will give it to them.
That is very interesting. I wonder what people will do if she is not found guilty of first-degree murder. I think there's going to be a big uproar, don't you, Beth?
Well, when I heard in Casey Anthony's trial, I was sitting in the courtroom, when I heard the first not guilty on first-degree murder, mm-hmm. you know, I thought, I couldn't process it. I thought, well, surely they're just going to a lesser. But just
mm-hmm.
that's not what you would hear. You would hear not guilty of the whole count, and then you go on to the next one, or it would be guilty of the lesser. You don't hear not guilty of first degree, but we find her guilty of second degree. It's not the way verdicts are read. So I just wasn't processing it, and it just took a wind. I mean, I really exhaled really deeply and sat back in my chair and like, wow, you know, I can't believe this is happening. I don't know what the jury will do in this case, but she's admitting she did it, unlike Casey Anthony. So I
mm-hmm.
think she'll be convicted of something.
Yeah, she's got to be. She will not be found not guilty of everything. I think there could be a hung jury. That still scares me to death. And if there is a hung jury, I think it's going to be because of Juan Martinez. That's just my thoughts right there. Beth, the judge has said in this case that it's going to wrap up this week and go to the jury. How can she be so sure? I mean, they're calling another witness who's going to say, another doctor who's going to say that Jodi Arias is not a borderline personality type person, which I think is baloney. She absolutely is. It's obvious. I don't even think you need to give her the test. It's so obvious. How, Beth Karras from HLN, how can the judge say we're going to be wrapped up and it's going to the jury?
I think that Judge Stevens has made arrangements for the courthouse to be open late on Wednesday because she said we will go until we finish. So that means into the evening if necessary, and she's also starting at 9 o'clock as opposed to, I mean, originally, for months, this case started at 10:30 or 11 every day. Then she moved it to 9:30 because she would do her calendar every morning. Now she's starting Wednesday at 9. I think it's because the jury is staying so many weeks longer than the original anticipated end date, which was April 11th. That's what they were told in December when they were selected, that she just needs to move it. Now, she allowed the defense to have this witness on Wednesday, and that's called a surrebuttal witness. And surrebuttal is not very common, and it's a witness to rebut something in rebuttal. So this surrebuttal witness will rebut Janine DeMarti. He cannot give and is not expected to give full-blown testimony like Dr. Samuels
mm-hmm.
Because he's going to just rebut DeMarti. However, it's probably going to take hours, and the judge is prepared to work into the evening if necessary. So that's how she's so sure. It's just going to be a long day, and then everyone has to get up early the next morning, hear jury instructions, and then Juan Martinez, probably Kirk Nurmi giving the closing for the defense. I say that only because Jennifer Wilmot gave the opening for the defense,
mm-hmm.
and they share. He's lead, and she's second chair. And then Martinez in rebuttal. So those two full days of closings, I think the jury will not start deliberating until Monday, the 6th, quite frankly.
And they are not going to be sequestered. They're just going to come in. How late do you think they'll work? Could they go from 9 until 9 every day?
Well, that's up to the jury to set their hours during deliberations. The judge has not said during closing arguments how late will work. She just said Wednesday for the last testimony. It will be until they finish the examination and the questions for the
mm-hmm.
witness by the jury. So that's late. But she has not set a schedule yet for Thursday and Friday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's going to be very interesting. And I'm going to start off with a question. Beth, can you say, I know you're real busy. Can I just,
I carved out the hour for you.
Oh, you are so wonderful. Okay, we do have one question that one of our Web Sleuths member had in our chat room, and I need to find it really quickly. Oh, and this goes to everybody. And Beth, I'll start with you. Has Jodi Arias shown any morsel, any little teeny tiny hint of remorse whatsoever in this case? Have you seen anything?
Well, I mean, she has shed tears. Those are real tears. But
mm-hmm.
what's motivated those tears, I don't know. I can't get inside her head. So I don't know if she's really sorry for killing him. She's certainly sorry for the position that she's in. She's certainly sorry that she's going to be spending years in prison. She was willing to take second-degree murder, which carried up to 22 years. Right, she's already done 5 of it. She'll still be a young woman when she gets out if it's a second-degree murder sentence. But I don't know. She's never uttered the words that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And she did tell one of the correspondents who interviewed her a couple years ago when she was first arrested that, no, she told Detective Flores that she would beg for the death penalty if she had ever done anything to harm Travis Alexander. So, I mean, I don't recall ever hearing remorse from her.
Exactly. Before I get to Katie and Katie, one question. This comes from, oh my gosh, Katie Kulady. At what stage, Beth, do they pick the alternates? Because they're going to have to pick some. Or are they already picked? I'm not sure how that works.
No, they're not picked yet, as they are in some states. I like the way they do it in Arizona. They do it in Michigan this way and other states. All the jurors have to listen very carefully through closing arguments because no one knows who the alternate is. They pick the alternates after the closings, and they'll already be instructed on the law before the closings, just before deliberations. And those alternates are not excused. They'll go home. They won't deliberate, mm-hmm. but they're available if something happens during deliberation. And if there's a penalty phase, they will come back, and they will sit in the penalty phase.
Boy, that must be frustrating, though, to go through all of that and wait out the jury instructions and then wait out for the verdict. And they're just like jurors, except the only thing they don't get to do is deliberate, correct?
Correct.
Oh, boy, that must be tough.
And if they come back for a penalty phase, they have to accept a verdict, obviously, of their 12 fellow jurors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, you know, because they could be needed for the next phase if someone else drops out.
And in Arizona, if all 12 jurors do not agree, even if it's just one juror, it is a hung jury, right?
Yes.
And at what point, this is just hypothetical? No, never mind.
Hypo.
I'm a little hypo third. Yeah. Just in case, let's pretend that the judge decides, you know, it's a hung jury. How far does she push the jury? To go back and debate.
Well, you know, that depends on the judge. That depends on the judge. They get an instruction, call an Allen charge. Some people call it a dynamite charge. But they get an instruction to really go back and keep an open mind and listen to each other and try their best to reach a verdict because they are the 12 best people suited to decide this case. They've sat for all these months in the interest of judicial expediency, economy. You know, please try to reach a verdict. And sometimes that works. They get an instruction. I've seen jurors go 2.5 weeks, and they're still hung. I mean, Phil Spector's first trial is about 2.5 weeks, and the judge had no choice, and it was 10-2. I mean, it was a very lopsided 10 for conviction. Sometimes judges will inquire on whether the split is you know, a healthy split. Is it 7-5, 6-6? If so, and they're just not budging, then it may be declared a mistrial earlier than later. But if it's just like one or two, they might be able to convince the one or two.
Well, and I believe you said this, and correct me if you did not, it could be there's always a possibility that one person wants to be famous for, you know, being the one hung juror on the Jodi Arias trial. So that's always a possibility in a high-profile case like this. Let's go to Katie Wick. Now, we've all been watching Dr. Drew, and we love him. I think most of us do anyway. I certainly do. I adore him. And Katie, you are so wonderful on the Dr. Drew show. I'm just going to call you Katie W., okay?
That's fine. Thank you.
You're welcome. But you know what? I kind of came on late in the Dr. Drew show, late in the game here. How did this come about? How did you get picked? How did you get on Dr. Drew?
I just went down there. Since I was 12 years old, I always wanted to be a criminal prosecutor. I've always been fascinated with law, specifically criminal prosecution. I wanted to be a child advocate and prosecute sex crimes. But life happened, and life took me on a different route. So I went down there just for the legal reasons. And my second day there, the producer of Dr. Drew came up and he said, "Hey, we're looking for somebody just to sort of give an inside perspective in layman terms, so to speak, as to what you see, what the jury sees." Because I know from the Casey Anthony trial and other trials that I want to know what the jury's doing. Granted, I cannot read into their minds, obviously, mm-hmm. but I can report when there's questions put in the basket, when they're paying attention, when they're writing a lot of notes. So that's how it happened, and it just actually ended up being a day-to-day thing, and I've been blessed to have this opportunity. And I'll tell you, my entire perspective on trials has absolutely changed. I will never, ever look at them the same again. And having met Travis's family and become pretty close to a couple of Travis's friends, seeing it through the eyes of the family and all of that, it's heartbreaking. And last week was a really, really hard day for me on Thursday. It's still difficult. for me 3 days later, what was seen in the courtroom, the photos and seeing the family and seeing Jody. You asked earlier about whether or not Jody has any tears, whether she's showing any emotion. And I, just to look at her facing the wall as sort of, in essence, as a coward, I just thought to myself, how pathetic is that? She's crouched down in her chair the same way she got Travis crouched down in that shower. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a whole different perspective on everything.
When you say you'll never look at trials again, can you be more specific? How did this change for you? Just knowing the family, you see how emotional it is? Or
yes, I've seen, because I sit with the public and I see the dynamics that go on, and I've seen that the circus like atmosphere that has ensued, I see things as I guess in a different perspective as far as the sensationalism of trials, that these are real people mm-hmm. that are hurting, that are suffering, that are crying. And I think, wow, I come home, I get there about 6 every day, and I get home about 8 o'clock, 8:30 at night, and I'm emotionally drained. And I just look at Travis's family, and I think, my gosh, the endurance that this family has, bless their hearts, what they've been through. And I will look at trials from that perspective, from the perspective of the victim, not the sensationalist perspective that I don't want to say I've looked at before, but having been there and having seen the family and met with the family and being in there every single day, it just breaks my heart to see what actually happens. And also mm-hmm. the legal aspect, we're trying to, and I'm working with some people here in the state legislature to try to find a way to get this Travis Alexander's law passed. I know a lot of people down at the Senate and the House here in Arizona. So people, victims cannot be defamed without sufficient evidence. And I think mm-hmm. that's something that's really shocked me personally. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I've always wanted to be, so I don't know the legalities of everything. But there's something that tells me, I just don't think it's right that Travis has been portrayed and defamed the way that he has been. And there must be some way we can change the law and maybe set, you know, precedents here in Arizona to get the ball rolling so victims like Travis Alexander don't have to be murdered twice, so to speak.
Oh, boy, that's the truth. We have a question from the chat room for you, KDW, and that is, since you're quote unquote a member of the jury, not really, but you are for Dr. Drew. Do you not look at the things when the jury is sent out of the room? Do you go out of the room too so you can't see them, or do you stay in and watch a little bit more?
I stay in. When we take breaks, obviously I leave, but the jury's gone too. I stay in because I think at the end of the day it's gonna be really fascinating because I wanna be able to know how much that plays a part. I want to know that if the fact that I saw what the jury saw, if that mm-hmm. plays a role in the conviction or lack thereof.
Understood. Okay, KDW, hang tight. We're going to get back to you. Katie, okay. Cool lady, my darling, how are you?
Hey, Tricia, I'm good.
Good. And we'll just call you Katie Cool, okay?
Okay.
Katie, give us an update on the family. I mean, before you tell me and our listeners, it was like KDW said, it was so awful knowing that the family was there and having to see those pictures. A lot of people, I've seen them, you know, they're on the internet. My heart just breaks for Travis's family. Are they holding up okay? That's a dumb question, but I don't know how else to ask it.
Well, you know, I mean, I agree completely with Katie Wick in that, you know, it's amazing the resiliency in terms of just the degree of stress that they're going through and the entire schemata of this whole thing, the travel back and forth, you know, financial stress, everything that's going on that's just yanked them out of their lives. And then add on to that the enormity of the trauma in the courtroom for this family. And Katie was in the courtroom when those pictures were being shown. I was not there. I saw Katie's raw emotion on TV. It was very palpable to me, as it was to Dr. Drew. And my friend Joy Lynn was in there that day, and I was just seeing her on the camera, and she was talking about how they were given really, really strict instructions to show no emotion. Those pictures were coming up. They had mm-hmm. to do whatever they needed to do if they were going to stay in the courtroom to show no emotion. And Joy Lynn was talking about how she was turning her head, and the tears were uncontrollably just running down her face. And she didn't even want to wipe the tears away to bring attention to the fact that emotion was coming over her face and crying stoic and just uncontrollable tears running down her face. And, you know, that it's unimaginable the degree of stress that this family has been, you know, inundated with through this whole thing. And it's commendable.
Very commendable.
They're getting out of bed in the morning, and those women, all of them, those men show up in suits and ties every day. Those women show up beautiful with their hair done and dresses and looking as gorgeous as they look every single day. It's amazing that they can even get out of the freaking bed, considering everything that's going on. So, they're really an inspiration to me.
They are. Travis's family and friends are definitely an inspiration. Beth Karras, HLN. Juror number 8 was excused. Now, it's been let out, and I don't think it was supposed to be, but it's been reported that he was caught with he was arrested for a DUI. Granted, right. Not good, but why would that excuse him from this trial?
Well, you know, we don't have the police report. The Gilbert Police Department's not releasing it right now, but it's my understanding that it will be Juan Martinez's office. They'll be prosecuting him. Sitting as a juror, asked to evaluate police testimony, and I don't know if he had a good or bad experience with this police officer. It may not have been such a good one. So he shouldn't be sitting, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a risk that he won't be fair in assessing the credibility of several officers, including Detective Flores. Now, in hindsight, with his own experience, and, of course, I believe it's Martinez's office that will be prosecuting him, not Martinez. But that office, so he just can't sit.
I didn't know that. I couldn't figure out what one had to do with the other, but that makes perfect sense. Beth, let me ask you a little bit more about the jury, and we'll get to our two Katies here in just a moment. Is there anyone, and you don't even need to say who it is, and I don't even know how you could tell this, but maybe it's just a gut feeling you might have, Beth, through your years of experience. You were a former prosecutor, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so you know. Looking at that jury, as you do, is there anyone on that jury that you go, I don't know, this one might just be an oddball?
Well, there were early on, but mm-hmm. I can't say that's the case now. I kind of wondered how engaged juror number 11 was, but he's off now.
Mm-hmm.
He just wasn't that engaged. I'm just looking at the rest of the jury in my head. But right now, there's no one that is a red flag to me.
Okay, that's good. That's very, very good, because I don't think any of us could take another Casey Anthony-type verdict. We have a caller. We're going to take a caller on the line here. This is Michael calling from Minnesota, a great friend of the show and a wonderful supporter of Travis Alexander's family. Michael, are you there, my friend?
Hi, Tricia. Thank you for taking my call. I'm becoming a regular.
You are. You're my first regular. Thank you so much, except for the people that harass me all the time. You're my first regular. So what is your question, my darling Michael?
Well, I have a comment. I would like to comment on something Katie Wick brought up. When Jodi Arias has refused to look at her handiwork on the monitors, both from the stand and when she sits there, I think everyone who is watching that feels the same level of outrage. Look at your handiwork. I wish she could be handcuffed, her hair pulled back, and her eyes propped open so she can look at exactly what she did. Oof.
That's
that
true.
That is when I made my blood pressure go up.
Katie Wick, would you like to, would you like to comment?
Yes, I would, and that's such a great point. And just to sit there, I just want to say to sit there and actually be, I don't know, maybe 20 feet from her with her hair covering her face, it's disgusting. And the fact that she showed curiosity with Detective Flores. Oh, really? Let me see the photos and all of this. But now because you have the jury in the courtroom, and I want to mention one other thing real fast if I can, and that's, Jodi supposedly sheds all of these tears, which I believe are for her. I can't get into her head, but based on her past, it's pretty evident. But and then the minute that the jury's out of the room, she turns to Jaffer and her attorneys, and she starts laughing and smiling. So she flips at the drop of a dime, and we see it every single day.
Grotesque.
Oh, that's just awful.
Now, Beth, I have a question for Beth.
Yes, please.
Beth, I love you and respect you. Having been a prosecutor and now in your role for HLN, having sat in on all of these trials, I know that it's impossible for you to predict, but I want your best guess. Is there any chance this will, A, hang, be a lesser charge? How in the world is that possible given the evidence of premeditation, the rebuttal case that completely showed this defendant to be a liar to the jury? I just can't imagine anything but guilty, but I'm kind of concerned. I don't want to have another emotional upset like the Casey Anthony trial, and I wish you could address that.
Well, I wish I could give you some specificity there. I mean, there's always a chance of a hung jury, always a chance. However, they get an instruction here in Arizona that if they believe she committed first or second, they can't decide which, then they have to go with second. Likewise, if they believe she committed second or manslaughter and they just don't know which, they have to go with manslaughter. Now, that may be on an individual basis, juror by juror, because it doesn't mean that they can't still be hung if they can't decide. It's a weird instruction that they get. But I do think we're going to hear guilty of something. I can't say, because I have been so surprised over the years at some of these verdicts. I've been so surprised. Like with Scott Peterson 9 years ago, I just knew looking at those jurors that 12 people were not going to let him walk, but I didn't know if it was going to be guilty or a hung jury. I just knew 12 wouldn't vote not guilty. And that's the case here. I don't think you're going to have 12 voting for manslaughter. I don't even know if you'll get 12 voting for second degree. I just don't know if 12 will vote for first degree. You know, the questions have been very pro-prosecution and skeptical of the defense, but not all jurors are asking questions. And those questions that the witnesses have been asked are not representative of the whole panel, because they don't sit and come up with a list themselves. These are individual jurors who are asking those questions. So it doesn't give us insight into the entire panel, those questions, only into those submitting the questions.
And excuse me, Michael, if I can interrupt here, Beth. So could it possibly be like the same two or three jurors asking the questions and nobody else is, and we're getting all this positive thinking going and boom, may not
but it's
be
more
the
than
real
two
picture.
Or three. It's more than two or three, but yes, I think it's the same ones over and over. I think,
Michael, did that answer
that.
All your questions?
Well, no, and I have one other that has to do with the Jody area supporters that are on the Internet.
Okay.
And their different theories and the things they are posting, which are just crazy. I'm wondering what is behind the psyche of individuals who can look at all this evidence and yet not believe what they're hearing. I mean, I don't understand it. It seems like a mass psychosis or something. I don't care who answers.
Michael,
anybody.
I'd like to
answer
that.
I think
that
you just answered your own question.
Psychosis?
I'd like to answer that because, I've dealt with the Internet since 2000, well, since 1999, but actually been in charge of my own forums since 2003. And there's just people out there that are plain nuts. And they get a thrill out of the attention of going against the obvious. Because what happens when you see somebody defend Jody Arias? What do we all want to do? We all want to jump on him and talk to him and accuse him and say, how could you, how could you? And look at all the attention they're getting. It's an attention thing, and they're just nutty, and they will always be here. And I'm telling you, if I'm sitting here, I'm lying. It's you. If I'm not sitting here, I'm lying is what I mean. If you ignore them, don't feed them. Don't feed the trolls. Don't give them the nourishment they need. Ignore them, and they will go away. And that's what we need to do with these people who defend Jody Arias. We need to ignore them. Michael, is that everything, my dear?
Only that I wanted to tell you, I did hear back from Chris. He forgot to get a hold of you, and I don't know if he was able to reach out to you, but he is planning on it.
We've already talked. He's coming on next week, and thank you, Michael, for doing that. I appreciate it. You are just such an angel, and you're definitely an angel in the eyes of the family. You've helped them tremendously, so thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you all, ladies.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
He's one of my favorite people, my first regular caller. That's great. And we do have a question from Steely Dan. Let's go to the chat room here. Let's see. Let me get to it here. Let's see. Oh, now I can't find it. Now it went away. There we go. Nope, that's not it. I'm sorry.
I got a couple of questions for Beth.
Go for it. You grab the Beth. This is this KDW or KDC?
It's Katie Cool Lady.
Okay,
hi,
go
Katie.
For it.
Hey, Beth. So one of them I pulled from the chat room, but another one is from my own head. So back to this premeditation business. So one question is, does the if they don't believe this whole fog business and they and all of the stuff that she did after the crime and the disposing of the weapons and the calling and leaving that message and going with Ryan Burns and the gas cans, all of that she did after the murder, if they don't believe that she didn't, you know, that she didn't do that in this fog, that she did that consciously, they believe that, does that weigh toward premeditation?
Yes. However, it does, although all those things are after the fact. What it does is show, if they don't believe her, then they'll probably think she lied to them. So if she lied to them about that, what else did she lie to them about? Her credibility may be shot anyway. But premeditation is everything up to the killing.
Okay, so do you
right?
think
it's up
that-
to the killing. Premeditation also, it doesn't require a week of planning. Premeditation can be formulated just before the killing. And the way the jury will be instructed that the definition of it is whether or not there was time to reflect on what she was doing, reflect on it, and she could have stopped herself. So if the jury believes the knife wasn't in the bathroom and that she actually ran down the hall to get it, that's a period of reflection where she could have just run out of the house instead of going to get a knife or a gun to kill him. You know, she could have, and so that may be enough for premeditation, believe it or not. So,
yeah,
all the planning
and the gas cans and the hair and all that kind of stuff. Okay,
that's just piling it on. That's a lot for the state.
Yeah. So that speaks to why Juan Martinez spoke so much about her, asked her so many questions about, did she remember where the knife was and, you know, what state was she in the fog and was the knife on the nightstand or was it to show really, you know, how much time she had to stop herself when she went
that's
to
That's part
grab,
of it. I think that's part of it, but also she had so many different versions of what she told. I mean, she told the psychologist, at least one of the psychologists, that the knife was on the nightstand. But by the
right.
time she was on the stand testifying, I think she couldn't remember, right? It was either in the bathroom or on the night. I mean, she now has him unrolling the rope and doing it in the bathroom, which is ridiculous. The bedroom was so big, he could have done it in the bedroom if that rope even existed. She also told one psychologist that he cut her ankles and wrists with the knife, but she told the jury that only her wrists were bound and loosely so that she could slip her hands out. So she was all over the place with her versions of what happened.
Right. So my other question, totally switching gears here, is at what stage of this will the jury instructions be given?
Well, the judge said the other day that the instructions will be first on Thursday and then closing arguments, which is kind of nice. Most judges will do it at the end, but jurors are so spent. Having the instructions first gives the jury a little bit of a framework of you know, what they're considering and what to listen for, but instructions are so technical that sometimes I wonder how much jurors really absorb until they have a copy of them and look at them and read them in the jury room. But they're coming first, is my understanding, first thing Thursday.
Okay, awesome.
Beth, hi, it's Katie Wick.
Hi.
Katie Wick,
hi.
You have the floor, my dear. Go for it.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to ask Beth, over the weekend, you know, I was reading all about this manslaughter charge and all of that, and like you said, there's that time period, right, where they have to, I guess they said it's quote-unquote like a cool-down period. Will that be on the jury instructions? Will the jury be told that if there was, in essence, for lack of a better term, a cool-down period where Jody Say did have all that time to go get a knife, will they be told that in the instructions that if she didn't have that, they cannot convict her of manslaughter? Do you have any idea of how the jury is instructed based on that? Because I think that's a huge part.
Yeah, okay, the cooling down you're talking about is part of the sudden quarrel or heat of passion manslaughter theory that the defense is asking for. The judge hasn't ruled on whether or not she's giving that, so okay. But I do think she will. That's different from the premeditation reflecting, okay? This is a different thing, because self-defense and this heat of passion, sudden quarrel, manslaughter are counterintuitive. Her defense here is self-defense. She's defending herself against him. Sudden quarrel, heat of passion means she was provoked in some way, and the classic example is a husband comes home and finds his wife in bed with his best friend and kills both of them. he was just, it was an intentional killing, but he was just out of his mind, was like, you know, just so upset that he just killed him. That's a manslaughter, but it was an intentional killing. So what Jody Arias is doing is saying, look, I'm asking for self-defense here. I was justified in what I did, but maybe you think that he provoked me into doing this, you know, and that he upset me so much. And so then the jury will consider this cooling off period. Did she have time? And if she goes to get the knife, that could be a cooling off period if they're considering manslaughter. So it would, just like it's a time to reflect, if they're looking at premeditated, it could be cooling, the facts for cooling off. Judges do not marshal the facts. Judges will read the law. The judge will not say, you heard testimony about blah, 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 and that's time to reflect, or that's a cooling off period. No, that's up to the lawyers to argue the facts, you know, and within the legal framework. So they will get, I think they'll get that, because the defense is asking for it.
Okay. Okay. We have about a million questions from the chat room, too, Beth. We're talking with Beth Karras, also Katie Wick from the Dr. Drew Show, Beth Karras from HLN, we know, and Katie Cool Lady, a victims advocate and a very good friend of Travis Alexander's family, as finally the Jody Arias trial wraps up. I never thought I'd be able to say those words. One of our listeners has a question about what evidence was not shown to the jury. It's my understanding that the jury did not get to see the handstand tape and a few other tapes that would have shown just how bizarre she really was. Why is that, Beth?
Well, it may be as simple as Juan Martinez didn't want to introduce it because he realized that it would just introduce an element of this woman's a little unstable and hence maybe a little sympathy for her. If he did want to introduce, and I'm not privy to that, the judge may have found it just too prejudicial. The judge does a balancing act. Where all evidence is prejudicial, right? That's why it's being used against her. But some of it can be just so prejudicial that it will outweigh any probative value, and that's what the judge does. But I'm not privy to whether or not Martinez wanted to introduce this or just thought, you know what, she's just a little out there, and I don't need to go there with this jury because they may think she's a little off, and it would be they would use that to Jody's benefit by giving her, say, second degree or something less.
Mm-hmm. I see. So it very well could be that, you know, you never know what jurors will take what they see and get sympathy for someone. It's, you just never know what another person is thinking, as everybody says. And let's see, we have another question here. This is for Katie W. Did you follow the Kaylee Anthony trial, or, quote, is this your first rodeo?
It's definitely not my first rodeo. I remember I was young. I was probably, I don't know, my gosh, 8 or 9. But I remember, I didn't follow the OJ trial, but I remember my parents watching it, and that's sort of when my interest in law peaked. And then Samantha Runyon, I don't know if you guys remember the case of a beautiful little 5-year-old
woman
who was
yes.
taken. Yes, that was the time when I realized, my gosh, this is what I want to do, is do criminal prosecution. And then I followed, of course, Scott Peterson trial, and I followed Casey Anthony, and now this trial. So I've followed trials all my life.
Ah, so it's just been kind of a lifelong thing. Okay.
Yes.
And Katie Cool Lady, are you there still, I hope?
I'm here.
Okay. Did you have another question for Beth?
I did. So, Beth, what are you going to be doing yourself during jury deliberations? Are you going to be hanging out? Is HLN just going to be, like, on hold and ready to come over any minute for deliberations? Like, what is your role going to be during that kind of lag time?
Well, that's a really good question. I think all that's being worked out, but I'm telling you, we have all hands on deck. Nancy Grace is going to be here, JVM, James Woods Mitchell, and their entourages are going to be here. They'll be broadcasting live their shows from outside the courthouse and other stuff. We might be live outside the jail. I mean, we have a lot going on in the next few days setting up. So I think they're going to have me, you know, pretty close to the courtroom. I don't know the details yet about when we'll get word that there's a verdict. We deal with the court administration for that. They'll let us know whether or not it's going to be 10-minute warning or 60 minutes. And because the families may be staying close to the courthouse, it may be very quick. So if I'm outside and on the air, I'm going to have to book really fast into the courtroom if we only have like 10 or 15 minutes warning. But it varies. Sometimes we get an hour. And Arias is not, she's going to be in the courthouse. She's going to be in a cell in the courthouse. So everyone's going to be close by. So I think when the jury announces they have a verdict, I think it's going to be read pretty quickly. So I'm hoping that I'm, you know, very, very close to the courtroom, but I don't think I'll be in the courtroom. I think that the anchors and viewers are going to have a lot of questions, like what you guys have. So I think I'm going to be on the air answering a lot of questions, too.
You're going to be busy, busy, busy. Ladies, do you have time for a question here from one of our listeners who's called in? This is Meredith from Detroit. Meredith, what is your question?
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Are you today? Thanks for taking my call so much, Tricia.
My pleasure.
I listen to
you every Sunday. Oh, thank you.
Kathy, you and I have chatted on Twitter before, but I'm sure you chat with a lot of different people. Anyway, well, my question was, and it was in the chat room, but I'm just wondering if Juan can bring up, because I was watching the testimony today of Jody and Juan and going at it back and forth, and he brought up the remote control that she returned to Daryl Brewer. And he was asking her, why did she have the remote control? And I'm just wondering, you know, he never really touched upon it again. And I'm wondering if he can bring that stuff up in closing, that and also the magazine, you know, the little magazine codes. I wonder if he can kind of expound upon his theories about it while he's in closing. Without having that much evidence about it, really.
That's a very good question, you know. What you can do in closing argument is what's called fair comment or inferences on the evidence. It's argument, and jurors are free to accept or reject arguments. They have to rely on the evidence introduced. But lawyers will get up there, and they will make their arguments what they believe the evidence shows. So, yes, Juan Martinez can get up there and say, she had a hearing coming up on, I can't even remember, on the, maybe the pedophilia allegation. She had a hearing coming up, and she was getting a message to someone, I submit to you, who was going to be a witness at that hearing, something like that. That would be fair comment on the evidence. Watch out for Nurmi to be objecting that maybe he'll say Martinez is going overboard and the evidence doesn't show it. But you can draw inferences from the evidence, and that's what makes a really good closing argument, when you just craft the story. And regarding the garage opener, Daryl Brewer, I mean, Brewer said she borrowed the gas cans from him. I don't know if Martinez, the way what he was suggesting was that she went and took those gas cans. But by the time he took, if that's true, by the time he took the stand, Brewer was supporting her. So I don't know that he could actually make any inference about the garage opener unless, I mean, she lived with the guy for 4 years, so, or for several years of the 4 years they were going out. So it's probably not that unusual that she had a garage opener.
Well, that, I mean, my theory about that is that, you know, I think Jody bartered the DVD player that was stolen from her grandparents and the remote that went with it for the gas cans. And that's why a few people are thinking that on Twitter and on the Facebook page, that there was some sort of a barter, and that's why he never asked for the gas cans back, and that's why he just gave her the gas cans. Of course, that's just my theory and a few other people's theory.
That's interesting. That's an interesting theory. That, if Martinez were to suggest that, that might be going a little bit too far, but it's an interesting theory. It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Very
well,
interesting.
I love you, by the way. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Meredith. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, have a great night. Thank you.
A couple more questions. I know we're... Good night. Thank you so much, Meredith. I know we're getting close to that hour, and we're going to try and squeeze a few more in. Beth, can the jurors ask questions on closing arguments, or are they done as soon as all the witnesses are through?
Yeah, they're finished. They're finished. Their right to ask questions is just for the witnesses.
Okay, and I would like all three ladies to answer this, Beth Karras, Katie Wick from Dr. Drew, and Katie Cool Lady, friend and advocate for victims. Here's the question. If she is sentenced to death, will she continue, will she speak at her sentencing, that's what it is, begging for her life? What do you think, Beth, if she's found guilty and they have the sentencing phase and it's between death or life, what do you think she'll do?
Okay, so it's called the penalty phase, and she is allowed to get on the stand at the end, in the mitigation part, after everybody else who testifies for her is called. But she's not to give testimony where she's questioned and there's a cross-examination. She can just make a statement. So, yes, I mean, at this point, she's just begging for for mercy, asking that that her life be spared. And, you know, I think that jurors would probably expect her to show some remorse for what she did. But I don't know. I would expect her to make a statement. Jody likes to talk. 18 days on the stand, all the media she talked to, I would expect her to make a statement. And then there's the sentencing. And if she gets death, that's different from the penalty phase. Sentencing is what the judge mm-hmm. does. And that she is expected to go to death row immediately, same day. But if she gets life or a lesser charge, the judge is going to set a sentencing date 30 to 60 days after the verdict.
Interesting. Okay, Katie Wick, what do you think she'll do?
I would say, based on her own words, that if she ever hurt Travis, she would beg for the death penalty. So perhaps she's going to get up there and say, please give me the death penalty. But I think, absolutely, I think she's probably going to get up there. She's probably going to speak, as Beth said. She likes to hear herself talk. And I still think at the end of the day, she thinks that she's smarter than everybody else. So I have no doubt that if given the opportunity, Jody will definitely go up there and perhaps, I don't know if I would say maybe beg not to have the death penalty, but give a piece of her mind.
There you go. And Katie Cool Lady, your thoughts?
Well, seeing that I asked this question,
yeah, okay.
Answer my own question.
Answer your own question.
I totally agree with these guys that she'll speak any opportunity she gets to talk. But my curiosity about that is like, the diciness of, you know, if they come back with first-degree murder, they really don't believe her story. They don't believe that she was victimized or domestic violence or self-defense or anything like that. And so how will she beg for her life without continuing to blame Travis for forcing her to kill him? And that, mm-hmm. to me, is an unanswered question. I mean, she's pretty sophisticated with language, and she's pretty much a loose cannon, I think, so I don't know that she'll really respond to much coaching by anybody. But I just find it really interesting to see how she's going to try to beg for her life without sticking with her party line of blaming Travis. And she might come up with a whole new story.
No, anything could happen. Ladies, I'm going to do two more questions, and I'll just ask for closing comments. The hearing on the prosecution, where the prosecution can use her lack of remorse in their closing arguments, was that ever decided upon?
You know, there were several outstanding issues that the judge put off. And if it's mm-hmm. been decided, it wasn't done in open court, it was done in chambers. If it's been decided, it might be decided. You know, there's a status conference at 10:30 on Tuesday, which is in chambers. So I bet a lot of these things are going to be hammered out, what they can say in their closing arguments, the instructions to the jury, all that. Almost all in chambers conferences, as well as the sidebar bench conferences, are sealed until after the trial. So I don't know if it's been decided because it hasn't been done in open court, to my knowledge.
Got it. And, Beth, this is for you as well. How long will closing arguments go on? Are they have an unlimited amount of time? You may have already answered this, and I apologize if you have.
You know, it's my understanding that it's going to be the better part of the 2 days. I think two full days. But it goes Martinez, the defense, probably Nurmi, and then Martinez and rebuttal. I do think it's going to take two full days, but mm-hmm. and the judge has not put a time limit on them, to my knowledge. So,
and I think you did answer this, but I just want to make sure. The prosecution and the defense can object if there's something truly out of order in the closing arguments, can't
yes.
they?
Yes.
They can.
Not nice to do that and break
right.
the other stride, but it's done for sure.
It's done. Okay. Katie Cool Lady, we're going to go backwards this time. Katie Cool Lady, your final comments as we get close to the wrap-up of this trial. What do you expect to see next week? Give us thoughts on the family, whatever you have, give it to us, please.
Yeah, well, this week is going to be a really supportive week for the family because without going into a lot of details, I've spent a lot of the last couple of weeks arranging lodging for their entire family who's flying in this week with a donor who is mm-hmm. providing lodging for all of them to stay together, including all of their extended family. So they've not had to figure out anything. It's all been done for them. And
wow.
so they're all landing. They're all going to be in the same place. And there's various projects in the work. Katie Wick is involved with these projects as well as other people that have been coming to the courthouse that we've created sort of a little coalition that's been helping the family. And so that's really heartwarming to see and how the community has come together, various businesses and restaurants and are really coming up to bat to help this family at this time. And it's very, very heartwarming. I'll speak to it kind of after it's over because we're really protecting their privacy at this time. But that's been really my project lately is just giving them some security of being able to be together in a way that isn't stressing them during this week. So I'm excited to see that come together.
And
so,
Katie, you've been doing a wonderful job, by the way. I'm sure the family would have just, I don't know what they would have done without you, to be quite honest. So thank you for putting this all together. It certainly isn't easy. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Were you going to say something?
No, that's really it. And, you know, I was talking to one of the sisters this week who understandably, I mean, I get her personality. It's very easy. It's very hard, I should say, to accept help from strangers. And
mm-hmm.
as I said to her, and I understand her personality because I relate to her personality, and I just said to her, listen, this may be you in 20 years who's reaching back, just like I'm reaching back to someone who's coming through this, who is surviving it just like I survived it. So let me help you like you will in 20 years help someone else.
Exactly.
And it is my blessing to help because it helps me to give some sort of purpose to what's happened to me. You don't know what to do with this in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how to make sense of it. And if you see a place to make sense of it and do good in the world, it helps you heal. And that seemed to be a conversation that made sense. Because this is not a family who has ever asked me for anything. In fact, it's been awkward giving to them. You know, it
mm-hmm.
seems like, oh, it's this great benevolent gesture that I'm doing. It's quite awkward because I don't know them that well. And I just sort of just started like showering them with stuff just out of just my own whatever. And so, you know, it's not like it's the easiest relationship in the world because they're strong and they're not asking for this. And so, but they're appreciating it. I don't mean to say that. They're very appreciative, but they're overwhelmed by that.
I can imagine.
I think people understand that kind of personality. So I just really want to say that about them because they're not, you know, Beth interviewed me earlier this week about this, and they're not, there's nothing frivolous about this. This truly is meeting the basics of your life to be able to attend this trial. For 5 months, can you imagine, you know, where's your mortgage coming from? Where's
mm-hmm.
your bills being paid from? Plus all these expenses and no income. You know, to me, it's just simple math. This is what these donors have been doing for this family is keeping their head above water. Money doesn't buy you happiness, but it buys you comfort. And it has been buying them just one less thing to have to worry about. And so that's been really rewarding for me to be a part of. And Katie's helped me with that, too, is continuing to help me this week. Bless her heart. Katie's been amazing through all of this. And just to say one more plug about Beth Karras is that Beth, and you guys don't know this because you're not at the courthouse, but Beth is an amazing teacher. And she has made herself so accessible to me personally to ask questions. And she's a natural-born teacher and naturally accessible and available to me. And somehow that's going to take her somewhere in her next steps with her career. But I just have to give a public shout-out of appreciation for how much she's helped me learn and been so available to me. And people may not know that about Beth, but she really is more than anybody else that's there. She really is accessible, and I will always love her for that.
It doesn't surprise me one single bit. We'll get to you, Beth, in just a moment. Thank you, Katie Cool Lady. And Katie Wick from Dr. Drew Show, your final thoughts, please.
I just want to say, I want to say that same thing about Beth. She's always been there to talk to and always to ask questions. She's amazing, and I'm so thankful to have met her. And same with I call her Kathy, not Katie Cool Lady. I call her Kathy because I'm Katie, but so there's no confusion. But she's probably one of the strongest women that I have ever met in my life. And going through this trial, I'll tell you what a horrible, heartbreaking, tragic thing this has been. And I just want to say that the little things that people are doing that mean so much, whether it's a lemonade stand that little kids do that raise $60, $75 to give to Travis's family, or whether it's somebody coming up to me saying, you know, this is all I have, but can you give this to the family? It's these pieces of good that prevail among such an evil act that really gives me hope. I said to my family the other day after these photos were shown in the courtroom, and I had my moment Thursday night. I kind of lost it and at home. And I said, but you know what, at the end of the day, you see the good that comes out of this. And I didn't know Travis. And the more that we see Travis, and I hope the weeks that follow, there's going to be more shows on TV that commemorate his life and that show him for the person that he was and not for the person that has been portrayed in the courtroom. And I just pray every single night that the jury can see through all of this, that the jury has discernment, and that in the end, justice prevails for Travis, and that hopefully out of something like this, like I said, perhaps a new law that protects victims, I just want Travis's family to have some sort of comfort. I know through my discussions with Kathy that you never have closure, and I hope to God I'm never in this situation. But as I said in the beginning of the show, that I have forever been changed, and whether I pursue law and take my LSATs in October, which I'm planning on doing, it's changed me forever, and I just pray at the end of the day that this jury gets it right, and that we don't have another Casey Anthony. But I'm just so thankful that I do see good that prevails out of such evil, and it really does give me hope. And that at the end of the day, Travis's family can have some sort of solace when this is all over.
Thank you, Katie Wick. We'll be watching you on the Dr. Drew Show
weeknight
on HLN. And now, finally, Beth Karras. And Beth, when you're done talking, I have two more real quick questions for you. So, Beth, your thoughts.
Well, you know, I can't give opinions about, you know, what I hope happens in this case, but I'll just speak about my experience in general. I never did think that Jodi Arias trial would be as big as it was, since there wasn't a mystery here, right? It was like she always admitted she did it, and usually cases that where there's a mystery and we really have to figure out the whodunit get a little more profile. So I'm really amazed that it was, it's as big as it is. But for me, you know, it's my last trial, and so I'm really glad to go out on a high note like this. I mean, I got word in the middle of the trial that it's my last case, and I'll be going out on my own and, you know, pursuing some new ventures in life. So I will stay in touch and continue to probably follow crime, but I'm not sure if I'll just be writing or in radio or television or online, not sure what I'll be doing, but it's been a really good run for almost two decades.
Well, you answered one of my questions, and that is, what are you going to do after the trial? So, Beth, I know you will end up somewhere better than you've ever been, because you certainly deserve it. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say, you know, Beth Karras, she kind of annoys me. Anytime you say Beth Karras, it's like, oh, don't you just love her? Because she gives it to us straight. There's no dramatics. There's no bombshells. It's just the straight truth, and you know you're going to get the truth. Beth Karras, I hope you'll come on the show again. You're always welcome. You can come on anytime you want. But you go write that big memo and take care and know that you are loved all over the world, my dear, okay?
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh, and by the way, everybody, just in case you are wondering, yes, Lifetime is making a movie about Jodi Arias. Is that a surprise? I didn't think so. Katie Cool Lady and Katie Wick, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I will be talking to
you
again very, very soon, ladies. Thank you very, very much.
And
don't forget, Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by the Web Sleuths Unclaimed Forum. You need to take a look at the Web Sleuths Unclaimed Forum, because you can jump right in and help other members reunite other people with their lost loved ones. It's an emotional, many times sad experience, but it is something that needs to be done, and you are needed in the Web Sleuths Unclaimed Forum. Go to www.websleuths.com/forums and just stroll down to our missing section. The opinions on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the guests and the host. So don't get your true crime muscles in a true crime knot, for goodness sakes. This radio show is completely different and separate from websleuths.com LLC and formsforjustice.org. So please stop foaming at the mouth if you're mad at me or the show and realize you can't hold Web Sleuths or Forms for Justice responsible for anything said on this show. Now do what we do in Utah, for goodness sake, and oh my flippin' heck, taste a nice sedative and calm down. We'll see you next week for Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. And please don't forget, next week, Chris Hughes, best friend of Travis Alexander, will be joining us. Good night, everybody.
Good night.